Kids Comics.
And here are your hosts, Michael and Andrew Leyland.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
And Happy New Year.
Is it?
Yes.
It will be.
It is. Yeah. This will be the Happy New Year. This will be the Christmas show. Yeah. But we didn't do it Christmas.
Right.
But we're doing it for New Year instead.
Okay.
So apologies to everyone who's waited a whole week for this extra content.
People are clamouring for this.
Yes. They were wondering where where our regular Christmas episode was.
Oh, have we had messages?
No.
No letters in the post?
No.
Where is it?
No. None of that.
No.
So nobody cares.
No.
But I still felt it was important to do a Christmas episode,
yeah,
because that would push our backlog back. But we're not doing this live from the Palace of Glittering Delights.
Oh, is that what you've called it now?
Yes. We're doing it live from Casa de Michael Erdena.
Okay.
We are not where we normally are.
For years we've been in one of the many De Manzo Corps towers, and I've been wondering what do the other towers look like, and here we are in Tower 3.
The lesser of the towers, exactly. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. It's a nice tower. It's got a nice view.
We have a view. We have a penthouse view from this one.
We have a penthouse view. Oh, it's delightful. And it looks like a castle.
So we can look at all the people outside and judge them and...
Mock. Anyway, if you've listened to us for any length of time, you will know that our Christmas specials, or New Year specials, we've done like what Doctor Who did. We've made it a New Year special instead of a Christmas special.
Right.
We basically just go through what we got for Christmas and talk about them, because that is fun.
Yeah.
Or I think it's fun. And no one's ever complained.
No. Well, yeah.
Well,
maybe they don't have the energy to complain.
That's true. Maybe they're all too stuffed on mince pies and mulled wine.
Exactly. And it's the perfect time to come in with this type of thing so that people will just be like, oh, I can't be bothered getting up for the remote. I might as well just leave it on.
I might as well just listen to this drip.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so do you want to go first? Because I think you should start us off, given that we are in your dwelling. Yeah.
Well, I suppose the first one, Mum handed this to me wrapped up and just kind of sheepishly said, this should have been for something else. Open it and you'll see.
Yeah.
And it is, yeah, it's a car air freshener.
Oh, good.
It's the little worm from Labyrinth saying hello.
Hello.
Because, quite recently I had my driving test with...
well done.
With a result.
Congratulations on that result. It was a quality result and no mistake.
The only thing that I will say is, who cycles on a 50? Because you're not going to reach 50, and that's all that I will say on the matter.
Funny that you should say that, but just yesterday, we were travelling down the road, as is our wont, in our car, and on the other side of the road was a cycle, and the car behind him took over him on a bend coming directly at us.
Right.
And we mocked him mercilessly and said, you should have passed, you should fail for that. You filthy scum.
Yeah, yeah.
But he didn't, because it wasn't his test. He was just a dick.
Yeah. No, it sucks that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Because you're supposed to give decent width to bicycles.
Oh, and... I'm well aware of the width that you have to give bicycles.
All right, well, given that that was relatively quicker than I thought it was, because I thought you were going to pick something from the big pile.
Because I kind of was, because Mum also got me something else as well. And this isn't for me. It's for
her. No, Mum bought you something for Mum.
Which is very other Mum thing to do. But it's...
Made me laugh.
I mean, I'm not entirely sure what it is. It's a Gundam.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the... There's kind of like a subcategory of Gundam of like the small cutesy ones,
with the big eyes.
But over the years, they've become less cutesy and less small and more detailed. And they've got their own TV shows. These ones and the Gundams themselves are alive. And I hate them. I think they're ugly. Absolutely, just the worst. But Mum really likes them, and every time we see them, she says that she wants me to build one for her. So she's picked one. She said herself that it was one that she thought was cute, but I would hate.
Yeah, she specifically picked one she thought you would hate.
And I mean, fair play. She's ticked the boxes.
So she knows you well.
Yeah. So anyway, I have to build this to give to her, and and then I don't have to look at it again
ever again. Oh, I feel quite sorry for your mum, though, to be fair.
Yeah.
I feel like we're picking on her because she's not here.
Well, I'm not brave enough to pick on her when she is.
That's very true. No man is. My first is off your mum, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise known as my wife, for people who are still confused with how this relationship works. Because we didn't say that you're Michael Leyland.
And I'm, oh, I'm Andrew Leland.
No, I'm Andrew. Get it right. This is like he starts it. I'm Hutch. And we are father and son. We're not married. So his mother, my wife. Hello, dog.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, the dog agrees with us. So your mum bought me Blake 7 Season 1 on glorious shiny Blu-ray.
Okay.
With added special effects.
Right.
And new glorious features. I don't feel bad about this.
Yeah.
Because I've never bought Blake 7 before.
Okay, right.
I've only ever been happy to watch it when it got repeated.
Yeah.
And it is amazing to me that the technology has come on in such a long time, such a short time, sorry, that not that long ago, I don't suppose you'll remember this, but they were saying that these will never be Blu-ray.
Right.
And Doctor Who will never be Blu-ray because you can't upscale the crappy videotape that the BBC used in the 70s. Well, technology has come on in such a way that you can now upgrade the crappy videotape.
It's surprising that the BBC kept the videotape.
It is surprising.
Weren't they quite notorious for just dumping everything?
Yeah, and taping over it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't see any value in any of this, so they didn't keep it. So they have upscaled it quite impressively. The new special effects are quite impressive.
Is it just remastered special effects or new?
New.
Have they done...
With models.
Okay, so they've not quite done a Star Trek.
No, they've CG'd enhanced.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And they've altered, like, the transporter beam effect.
Yeah.
So it's not as obvious. So stand there, take a picture, walk away, take a picture. They've made it slightly better than that.
Okay.
And it's the thing I like about Blake 7, though, is your mum likes it. So I get to watch it.
Well, that's because it's bleak and everyone dies.
Well, at the end, yes. We're not there yet. Right. But everyone forgets, right, that the first episode is basically just Blake.
Mm.
And do you have you ever watched this?
Only passively, yeah.
So the first episode is basically just a little play where Blake was a freedom fighter standing up against the new totalitarian regime.
Okay.
And he got brainwashed and he's forgotten all of this.
Yeah.
But the rebellion has carried on building.
Okay.
So the rebellion try to bring him back into it and they all get killed.
Right.
The Federation are onto them because somebody has betrayed them.
Okay.
And they decide they can't kill Blake because then he would just become a martyr. So they frame him for being a nonce. They literally frame him.
This was a BBC production.
For being a pedophile. Yes. It's never mentioned in any subsequent episodes.
It's bold.
But it's so the hero of the show has been framed. But not just that, they've made the kids that testify against him believe it happened.
What, they brainwashed them?
Yes! They've brainwashed the kids into telling the truth.
Right.
And they think this really happened.
Okay.
And that's how evil the Federation is.
That's bold. Like, not frame him for murder or anything like that. Like, that's a very specific choice.
They have particularly chose something that will engender hatred in people. And he's shipped off to Cygnus Alpha. And the first episode is so dynamic and bold and different. And then the rest of the series basically becomes a space opera.
Right.
And this is never mentioned again. And he finds the Liberator in space.
Yeah.
As you do.
Right.
But it's really good. And the advantage of recording a week after Christmas Day is that I've watched 5 episodes already.
Okay.
So that gives me... I'm able to talk about it with authority rather than just saying, well, I've got this box set and I've not even looked at
it. I'm sure it's fine.
But I'm sure it's great. Yeah. Go on.
Okay, so to continue the Gundam theme is my friend Lewis bought me these. Last year, he bought me the Zeta Gundam from the aforementioned, the titular show, Zeta Gundam. Mm. So this year, he bought me the sequel, the Double Zeta Gundam, because I've just finished watching this.
There's a lot of Gundams.
Double Zeta, I didn't think was as good as Zeta. Zeta, I think, is the best of the Gundams. It's my favourite. And it's somewhat similar to I think I said to you before, it's Blake 7, but about kids. It's really, really good. But then Double Zeta's less so. It was more of like a slapstick comedy. But the actual Double Zeta itself is quite cool, very chunky. The whole gimmick, because they were making the shows alongside the toys as well, because the toys was what brought back the show, really, and made it successful.
Merchandise is where the money's made.
But every Gundam needs a gimmick to make it interesting. Now, this one it's not the one thing. It's made up of 3 spaceships, essentially, 3 fighter planes. I think Power Rangers might have been big at this point. and they combine and then transform into the double Zeta. Now, I was thinking this is the high-grade line, like the cheaper way to get in. There's loads of them. They're not as detailed. They're quite, you know, they are what they are, quite simple. So I was thinking, you know, there's no way they're gonna have the big combining gimmick. Yeah, no, it's huge, it's chunky. There's loads of plastic. You do
so
have to
you
make
get
all
to make
three.
The little.
You make all three right. planes and then combine them and transform. So.
I love that the instructions are in Japanese. So how are you gonna follow?
You got a little translator up on there. It's mostly pictures as well, so it's relatively easy.
So it's like IKEA.
Yeah, basically. but then just kind of, I think because Lewis likes to show off that he doesn't have to pay rent or mortgage, he bought me another little Gundam as well.
Not that you're bitter about that.
Oh, I'm incredibly bitter. I don't even bother hiding it.
That's fair enough. Did you not used to have one of those on your bookshelf?
Maybe. Yeah, well, I had quite a few of these ones. So these are the SD
when you were
ones,
a kid.
So the small ones.
Yeah.
But these are just the main Gundam suits, but smaller. And he's got me the main one from the first series. There's like a little
that looks very
one.
Familiar.
Well, this is the one from the one that you read. And
right.
So it's the main kind of flagship suit. So I've got this to build as well. A little cutesy thing.
Keep you busy while you're off work.
Yeah. And then just as well, because it's from Lewis, he got me a little keyring that's got the PlayStation 2.
Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear Solid 2 in there.
Solid Snake.
Yeah.
Was that for your car keys?
Yeah.
It's not a touchy subject.
It's not a touchy subject.
Not in
well,
any
the
way.
Thing is, I'm wearing what I thought would have been my lucky Honda hoodie as well, because I thought, I'll wear this on my driving test. It'll get me one step closer to driving the 1988 Honda Prelude of my... No, cyclists. I had other dreams.
It's not the cyclist's fault.
It was entirely the 50... It was a 50-mile-an-hour road. What are you doing?
He's not trying to do 50. Unless he's going downhill.
Spandex menace.
Yes. my mum bought me another Blu-ray set. Doctor Who, The Collection, Season 25. Sylvester McCoy.
Right.
I know what you're thinking.
How did they break down these ones into seasons?
And you're right. They were seasons.
Okay, right. Okay.
I mean, when it started, it was like 39 episodes a year.
Right.
But they haven't. They've only done one early box set. They've done season two,
right,
with William Hartnell, and they've done that one because that is the black and white season with the most episodes still around.
Right. Okay.
But in the middle of one of the stories called Marco Polo, it suddenly becomes Cine Snaps.
Right.
Have you ever seen them? It is literally still frames.
Fans
took off the TV, right, and they've matched it with audio that fans audio recorded. Because back in the day before the VCR, we would audio record.
Right.
That's how I know every single word to Werewolf's pilot episode. Because
right.
I did that just so I could have a soundtrack of the music. But the other effect of that is that I know all the dialogue as well.
Right.
It's hidden. Where you'll never find it.
I feel like that kind of thing. I feel like I need to kind of rewind a little bit.
Okay. Rewind.
People would take photos of the team like they were at a concert.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I love this bit where the doctor does this. Yeah.
But it actually proved invaluable when they animate them because they've got the Cine Snaps.
Okay.
So they can use them to see what the actors were doing and all that stuff.
Right.
These ones on season two have not been animated.
Okay.
I don't know. Because it's Doctor Who fans. Find me a more obsessive fan base than Doctor Who.
Right, okay.
Anyway, they did. Just accept it and move on.
I don't want to. I don't feel like I want to live in a world.
So
where
in a world where these episodes didn't exist, that was how people first watched them.
Right.
And then they started animating them.
Okay.
And I honestly think that the next step is they will AI the episodes that no longer exist.
Garbage.
Well, you say that. But if AI is useful for anything, that would be you're not doing anything though that's insulting. You're recreating something that existed that doesn't exist anymore. They're not making new William Hartnell episodes.
Yeah.
They are merely recreating what in the short-sightedness they deleted.
Mm.
I think that's a perfectly acceptable use of AI.
Mm.
And I would rather they did that than made new episodes starring William Hartnell.
Yeah.
Because he's not here to agree to it. Mm. And I think that way lies madness. Because, like, the next James Bond's going to be Sean Connery. No.
Is that a thing?
No. Well, no, Barbara won't like that hat.
Well, the James Bond films are just content, aren't they? Yeah. You know, we need spin-offs.
Yeah, and Money Penny spin-offs and stuff. But anyway, season 25. I know what you're thinking, and you're right, but Dad, you didn't like the later seasons of Doctor Who. You actively dislike Colin Baker.
Right.
You actively dislike Sylvester McCoy. And you are part right. I do actively dislike the Colin Baker era. I've watched them all again on Blu-ray. They're still shit. Honestly, I'm not kidding.
Right.
They are still awful. Yeah. All love to Colin, who is brilliant.
Right.
And very smart and articulate.
Yeah.
And on the Big Finish audios, is brilliant.
Right.
You know, when he's got proper writing. But it sucks. But Sylvester McCoy,
right.
I am not too proud to say I have done a complete 180 on.
Okay.
He's actually really good.
Right.
His first episode is garbage.
Okay.
His first episode is trash.
Right.
Of the highest order. Okay. It's almost as bad as Space Babies.
Just right, okay.
Almost as bad as Space Babies.
Right, right.
But after that, there was an episode that they did, and I'm watching, I think it's called Paradise Towers, and I'm watching it going, this is 2000 AD.
Right.
They're doing 2000 AD on Doctor Who. And then I get to the special features, and the guy who took over as the script editor, at that point, he was literally like 23. Straight out of school.
Reading.
They'd employed him because he was young and cheap. And he was like, all right, well, what can I do with Doctor Who?
Yeah.
I know what I can do with Doctor Who. And he was a big 2000 AD fan.
Right.
He was a big Alan Moore fan. Big Grant Morrison fan, and he took that and he said, let's do that as Doctor Who. And when he said that in the special features, I was like, oh, right.
Suddenly you could just recontextualise everything.
And Sylvester tones his performance down a bit and stops playing spoons on Kate O'Mara's chest. He does that.
Okay.
And by the time you get to season 25, which is his second season,
yeah,
this is a brilliant season. Remembrance of the Daleks is brilliant. The first time the Daleks elevate and lift up a stir.
Okay.
Russell was not the first person to do that. They did it here first. And he employed Sophie Aldred to be Ace when she came to her audition with a Fanderson badge on and a Watchman badge on. And she gave him the Dark Knight Returns and said, have you read this? So she got the job.
Bit just for that.
Because she understood what he was going for. He said, that's funny you should say that. That's what we're going for. So she knew what he was on about. Silver Nemesis is all right. Cybermen are back. The only problem with it, you're at the point now where if you fire a gold coin at them, they fall over and die. That's a little bit shit.
Okay.
But, you know.
Is that an actual plot point?
Yes. She actually fires a gold coin using a catapult at his chest and he falls down and dies.
Okay.
Whereas you used to actually have to smother them with gold.
Right.
For them to die. And then there's the Happiness Patrol and the Greatest Show in the Galaxy, both of which I've not rewatched for a while, so I'm looking forward to it.
So your opinions could change.
My opinions could change, but I don't think they will. But why I asked for this, because another thing I know that you're thinking, and you're right, but they're all on iPlayer. Well, no, they're not. Some have gone off.
Okay,
some have been removed.
Right.
Last year's The Daleks in Colour, gone. Not on iPlayer
anymore.
They
made such a big deal out of that as well.
The Terror of the Zygons, gone. Not on iPlayer anymore. The one with Hugh Edwards in, gone. Not on iPlayer anymore. I don't know why that one would be removed. And it must be a rights issue of some kind. Anyway, so they could all go at any minute, which made me go, all right, I'll buy the Blu-rays. But
you've got all of them anyway, so you can't...
There's one or two I don't have.
Kind of a missing...
Yeah, there's one or two sets I don't have. But this, every single episode has been redone with deleted footage. Because one of them, I can't remember, so Silver Nemesis is longer, because they shot far too much and had to cut a lot out of it. Because this was the days when it was three episodes for a story.
And there Instead was, of four.
Yeah. And there was one story in this. I think it may have been the Happiness Patrol or Greatest Show in the Galaxy. I can't remember. But there's one of them in this where they thought they were doing a four-parter.
Okay.
And then at the last minute, something happened budgetarily.
Yeah.
And they had to cut an episode's worth of stuff.
And then condense it.
And condense it into three parts. And they've remade it into a four-parter.
All right, okay.
And none of that stuff's on iPlayer.
Yeah.
So all that's worth having, I think, to get the extended versions. And certainly I hope Silver Nemesis has improved, because that was the 25th anniversary story. But no, I've done a complete 180 on Sylvester McCoy and now think that he's actually quite good.
I suppose it's going to be one of those interesting things as well when you're watching it and there's more of it as to whether more is necessarily better. Like, does it improve by having more content in it?
I think it will improve the one that was written to be a four-parter and they had to cut it.
Yeah.
That's not a Watchmen thing. Is it Watchmen where he just threw all the extra footage back in and made it 4 hours long?
Oh, I can't remember.
Or was that his Rebel Ridge one or whatever it's called?
It's one of them.
Yeah. Were Aliens. and Terminator are prime examples. The director's editions are good, but they're not better.
Oh, Aliens.
They're just longer. No. I don't think Aliens is better for having that scene in the middle with the chain guns.
All the bit... No, there's all the bits at the beginning, isn't there?
Yeah, but do you need all that? All the stuff on LV-426?
All the stuff with Ripley's daughter? Yeah. Because that's not in the theatrical.
No, the stuff with the daughter is good because that explains why she develops a bond with Newt.
Yeah.
But the only one that's better is The Abyss. Because the ending makes sense in the director's edition.
Right.
Whereas it didn't originally. You were scratching your head going, what?
Okay.
So they're extended. It's nice to have those deleted scenes put back in there, but they don't make the film better.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings does.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings, the extended editions, we cannot now go back and watch the theatrical cuts.
Well, I feel like that's one of the interesting things, isn't it? Where it wasn't a case of he'd just put in the deleted stuff. It was more of a case of he filmed
three films. Yeah, he made this film.
And then had to edit them.
And then
down.
Had to cut them.
Yeah.
Same with that.
Right.
Suddenly they've been told, no, this is three episodes, not four, but we filmed it, don't cut.
Right.
And they've had to re-edit it.
Yeah.
So now they've finally got to put it back together. So I think that will be an improvement. I hope it will be an improvement. Watch this space. Next.
I'll go this one next. So this one's a weird one.
It's very weird.
It's a very weird one. So this is the Superman versus Wonder Woman Treasury facsimile edition. And the reason why this is weird was because this was announced at one of the conventions.
Yeah.
But then never, as far as we knew anyway, solicited.
It did not appear on our order lists from the place we buy our comics from.
And you noticed that this was out and I was like, oh, is it? Because...
Yeah, I texted you, do you want one?
Yeah.
But you were so slow in replying, you were tardy.
Work does that.
Yeah. But I'd left. I'd gone.
But I think so far, we both have all of these ones, but I couldn't get this one because when I was looking it up, I couldn't find it anywhere that had it. Some places did, some places didn't. It kind of seemed like this shouldn't exist, but at some places it did.
It was weird.
But anyway, yes, and then...
I only saw it in one shop.
Yeah. And then, because it was from you, I assume you went back to that same one shop to get it.
We went back to Liverpool to do some Christmas shopping in Liverpool 1. Because your mum was after something she'd specifically seen in Liverpool Primark.
Right.
And if you're in Britain, Primark is a primo shop. Great stuff. Incredibly expensive.
Long-lasting.
Yeah, very, 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 very exclusive store.
Yeah.
Nicknamed Prime Arnie for a reason.
I mean, just the queues that you've got to go through.
But that's not a lie. So we went back there, and I went back up to that, and they only had the foil cover. And I know you won't really like that one, but it's better than not having it.
Mm.
And then that was tucked away at the back, so I got you the proper facsimile. We talked before about how much we love the facsimile editions.
Yeah.
I specifically love the Treasury facsimile editions. The paper stock's brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous.
It's weird. I thought it might have just been like a printing error with the Ra's al Ghul one, but the comic is bigger than the cover.
Than the cover, sorry.
But no, they all are. They're all like that.
The art's beautiful. It's a testament to how much I love the facsimile editions that I have bought this one, given that I think it's tripe.
It's going to be funny because I don't think I've ever read it.
Good. I'm looking forward to you reading it because it is everything I think is wrong with putting superheroes in a World War II story.
Yeah. So considering you've not exactly kept your
opinion. Oh, the art's beautiful.
I'm already kind of going into it slightly a little bit biased or expecting something.
I'm going to reread it. And there was a part of me that like, should we cover it?
Yeah.
But then there's that niggly thing at the back of my head that, no, I'm covering it from a position of not liking it.
Yeah.
And we've always said we wouldn't do that. But for me, it was Superman takes on Japanese fighter jets.
Right.
But you can't put Superman in a position where he may have to kill people.
So they're robots.
Okay. They're drones.
Yeah.
So, because why would we want that moral ambiguity in our Superman story?
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman's ultra feminist in it. In that 70s way of a 70s male writer who thinks he's being feminist, but isn't.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So there's that going for it as well, which I'm really looking forward to reading.
So far, there's not really much going for it, is there, other than
just... And you've also got that thing, Jerry Conway seems to think only America fought in World War II. Which, you know, always makes me happy. So I'm kind of like...
The World War was only two countries, wasn't it?
So... It's not my favourite, I am looking forward to reading it again to see if I just can put all that to one side and perhaps enjoy it as just a romp in the same way that Superman Muhammad Ali is a romp.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I love them so much that I bought that again.
And it's that thing now, because they've done quite a few of them, every time they announce one, it's like, well, I've got no interest in it, but I need to get it.
Yeah.
I need to, you know, add it to the collection.
And I'm wondering how long before Marvel starts doing them.
Well,
but Marvel didn't do a lot of new material in their treasuries.
Just reprints.
Yeah, most of them. So the only thing really Marvel could bring to the table was if they said, all right, we'll reprint Superman, Spider-Man.
Well, the DC's just done the Batman Villains one, which was reprints, wasn't it?
Yeah. So some of the treasuries weren't all new stuff.
But it would be good if they did a facsimile of Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'd got the original, I'd probably still buy it. So I can read that one without disturbing the original. You know how it is. Anyway, my next two, graphic-y novels-y, Dana Bobbitt-y's. Thanks, Dana. She's got her headphones on, she can't hear me. Daredevil Black Armour, which is, I think, D.G. Chichester wrote this. And it's, I think it's set back when Daredevil was wearing his, Kelsa Price, black armour.
Okay.
But I haven't read it yet. It's a damned ugly costume, but I love it. But the original run was drawn by Scott McDaniel.
Right.
And I really like Scott McDaniel's stuff. And I'm a bit disappointed that Scott McDaniel did not draw this. I'm a bit disappointed they didn't bring back the entire team. I don't like, just flicking through it, the art looks lovely. I don't dislike it, so I'm not against it. And then the other one, a Simon Cross thriller, Too Dead to Die, by Mark Guggenheim and Howard Chaykin, is a James Bond pastiche about an aged secret agent who's cool and wears tuxedos.
Okay.
But he's American, so he's not as cool as Bond.
Yeah.
And I've read half of this. I was reading half of it sat here the other day when we were waiting for you to cook Christmas dinner. And Howard Chaykin's art's great. I really do like it. So the first half of it is good. I've not read the rest of it yet. When I read the rest of it, watch this space. But I'm looking forward to that. Good, good, good. Next picks.
So, Dana, I think she bought me the big chunk of these next ones now. But this one is Akira Toriyama's Manga Theatre. Which is, if you remember in the Dragon Ball episode,
yes,
I mentioned that Toriyama wanted off Dr. Slump, his manga at the time.
Yeah.
And so the publishers was just like, yeah, all right, just give us something else then. And he basically went through loads of ideas that were printed in Shonen Jump. And in Japan, this was collected as three volumes, just three like manga-sized volumes.
Mm.
Two of them are pre and early Dragon Ball, and then the third volume is post-Dragon Ball. So there's a bit of a jump in his style. But this is mostly, it's a collection of most, if not all, of his non-Dragon Ball shonen work.
Yeah.
Some of it is, I've not read it, but from what I know of it, some of it is stuff that's maybe not necessarily aged as much because it's got that kind of Japanese silliness that doesn't translate well outside. And then some of it's quite fun, quite good. As with all Toriyama, you can see the bleed through. You know, there's a lot of stuff in here that looks very similar to Dragon Ball and Dragon Quest. You've also got on here Dragon Boy, the two-part story that was successful and became what we know as Dragon Ball.
The art looks
nice.
So
that's in here as well.
Very recognisable as him.
Yeah, very distinct style. And you can see the clear difference here in the last volume. There's a lot of Dragon
Ball
stuff.
That does look more Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball, yeah. And then you get to this and it's very...
And that looked more Dragon Ball.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting in that as we, you know...
Now I know the difference.
We'll mention on an upcoming show here, Toriyama's art style evolved quite significantly, mostly out of laziness. Like, he kind of didn't want to draw. So if he could cut corners, he would. And so you can kind of see just how much detail is going in so many panels. It's quick, it's kinetic, and then you get to his later stuff and it's much more stylized, much more kind of dynamic. So it's quite interesting, and I'm quite excited to read this because I think this is the only version we have it translated in English.
Right.
It's just this nice big hardback that collects the three little paperbacks.
It looks very pretty.
So it's going to be nice to kind of delve into this post Dragon Ball.
Good, 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 yeah. Next, I think this was off your mum. It's the latest Ed Brubaker Sean Phillips I think, does Jacob do something with this one as well? Does Jacob
colour in?
Shall we have a look? Colours by Jacob Phillips. So it's the latest incestuous... I'm kidding. It's the latest Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips thing.
It's a chunky one as well.
Of the Unholy. Which I know absolutely nothing about.
Mm.
For whatever reason, this did not get the publicity push that their other works did.
Mm.
It didn't seem to be accompanied by interviews and whatever. Yeah. Brubaker mentioned it on his newsletter kind of thing.
Yeah.
But even at conventions this year when I've seen Sean Phillips, I've not seen that he's had this with him a lot.
Right.
I did see it in OK Comics in Leeds, and they had it before it came out.
Yeah.
Because Sean Phillips is a patron of that shop, and he does them little ends pieces and sketches and stuff to go with it to sell them for a bit more money and make a bit more money. It looks like an Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips thing. But it's not a Reckless. It's something, it's a riveting horror thrill ride, it says here. But that's it. That's all I know about it.
Well,
I've read it.
They've just been doing the one-offs, haven't they?
Yeah, this. So they did five Recklesses.
Yeah.
And then they've done a break where they've done these different things. So
essentially
this is
one a year, so they've not exactly had a break.
No. So they've done Night Fever, Where the Body Was.
Which only dropped again last year.
And then this year. Houses of the Unholy. So I don't know what the plan is now.
Criminal.
Are they going back to Criminal?
I believe, from what I've seen of
Sean
Phillips,
he's doing
Criminal.
That would make sense, because Criminal is coming out as an Amazon Prime TV show.
Yeah.
This very year. It's got some good people in it, and I'd be damned if I can remember who they are.
I know Charlie Hunnam's in it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
All right, okay. Well, we'll certainly give that a watch when it comes out and see if it's any good. But yeah, they've not... If they're going back to Criminal, are they going back to Criminal and just doing them like this now? Just as hardcover volumes? Or are they going back to doing them as comics?
Because that's kind of what they started doing, wasn't it, with the last chunk of Criminal. It was mostly just the...
No, they still did them as comics.
It was a series, but it still had...
They reformatted them as hardcover graphic novels.
Yeah.
And in the case of... Was it Cruel Summer? Or the one that was based on the comic book writer?
Yeah, Bad Weekend.
Bad Weekend. They reformatted it completely.
And expanded
it. Adding in new pages and new dialogue and changed it. So basically we had to buy it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So that we could do, you know, compare and contrast. But that was basically the pilot for everything they've done post-COVID.
Yeah.
Because in COVID, they couldn't do the comics.
Yeah.
So they did them as these hardcover graphic novels.
Which is where bookstores
were still taking books.
Mm.
So it was a way for them to keep working and keep making money. And they've just carried on doing them as hardcover graphic novels.
Yeah, well, it seems to work for them.
Yeah, they seem to be having a lot of success with it. So, fair enough.
So, next for me to continue, there was very much a theme going on with Dana's presence this year.
You fell in love with Dragon Ball again. Yeah.
It's the Dragon Ball A Visual History, which is in this nice shiny slipcase.
Hmm.
Here we go.
It is actually, it's like one of those old, what were they called? The Vault.
Oh, yeah. So I guess it's similar to this. It is a visual history. In chronological order, it is more or less...
It is like an old vault. It's got posters that pull out and...
Well, even...
The vaults would have, like, old adverts and old free gifts and stuff.
Because you
have Terminator the Vault.
Yeah.
Which I've still got on my bookshelf. Yeah.
Well, even cooler as well, there's quite a lot of detail. So inside the slipcase, there's little profiles.
Yeah.
So there's quite a lot of detail going on. And then underneath the dust jacket, you've got some original concept art.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a collection in chronological order, because it tells you the year as well. Just the covers of the shonen, any pinups, any splash pages, any designs... So it kind of goes through all of Dragon Ball then through to Dragon Ball Z, because in Japan it was all just one series, Dragon Ball. Just adverts.
Pirate Goku.
Every once in a while it'll take a break, so when we go into a new year, it'll be like, this is what happened this time. Oh, this character showed up. And then we go straight through. That was artwork done for the calendar, 1987 calendar. We're into Dragon Ball Z here, so some more concept art. And then as Dragon Ball Z finished, you can kind of start seeing him redrawing for the Japanese hardback releases. You can see how his art style has kind of evolved since then as well. Any artwork he did for video games, any artwork he did for the shows that he didn't work on. And then at the back is a collection of every single cover.
So like the back of the Ultimate volumes, the hardcover omnibus volumes?
Yeah.
All the covers. That's quite
cool. So the mangas, the individual releases on the side would have an interconnecting cover, so you've got that as a full image running across here.
Like the patchworks. Artworks.
In the back of a volume, there would be an Ask Toriyama section where there would be a Q&A.
Yeah.
It doesn't collect the Q&As, but the Vizbigs do.
Right.
But what this does collect is the self-portrait he would do to accompany them. Some of them photos, some of them it's just a drawing. Here's the 3-in-1, which to this day is the only English translation collection that collects all 500 and odd chapters as Dragon Ball. It does not break for Dragon Ball Z. It's just all one thing. And then, yeah, just some interviews at the back, a little bit of an index. So it's quite, it seems very comprehensive, if not information-wise. At least there's a good chunk of most of Toriyama's artwork that he did on it collected in chronological order. So it's really nice, and it's a really nice kind of companion
piece. It is like one of those old The Vault things.
Yeah.
So nice little art book.
With reading it and watching it at the moment, it's nice to kind of have this little index, essentially, as like a companion piece. So it's really nice, and I've not delved into it too much. But yeah, it seems...
It is, it's lovely.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed with it. Right, next, your sister. Sister. So, you have a twin sister. Bought me the brand new hardcover Origins of Marvel Comics by Stan Lee, contentious, edited by Chris Ryle, with a new Alex Ross cover.
Nice.
Notice what he's added.
Okay.
He's added drawing hands.
Yeah, yeah.
So to imply that Stan alone did not bring all this into the forefront, because this book is essentially redressing the balance between Stan's, shall we say, faulty recollections on how the Marvel Universe came about,
right,
with the more factual explanations of how it all happened. I've only really read the introduction first, because the introduction was fascinating, because the introduction is a history of Marvel Comics collected editions.
Okay.
So, it's talking about all those things that I grew up with in the 70s.
Yeah.
Were the little pocketbooks that were in colour and black and white.
Yeah.
And the Fireside collections.
Right.
And of this, which this was the first one. This idea that Stan had that comics could be collected in such a way that they could be put into the libraries.
Okay, yeah.
Which, again, something Jack wanted to do with his DC stuff.
Yeah.
He wanted to have Fourth World collected, and DC said, no market for that, which there may not have been at the time. So that's all quite fascinating. I've not gone into depth on the other collection, the other new introductions. Tom Brevoort's got one in where he's going to talk about, you know, Alex Ross says more to the story, because there is an entire book that has just come out called Stan Lee Lied.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And the book's entire concept is based around what Stan writes in this book.
Right.
I've never owned Origins of Marvel Comics.
Okay.
So I'm very much looking forward to what it is Stan wrote here that so incensed the author of Stan Lee Lied that he doesn't even tolerate the idea that there may be another side to the story.
Yeah.
And that maybe Stan did lie in this.
So this isn't a new book, it's just a new
printing. From page 46, sorry, page 45, yeah, from the...
Mm.
It's a reprint of Origins of Marvel Comics.
Okay.
So there's 50-odd pages of new text pieces.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you get to the end of the book on page 280, 291. And then again, there's another 50 or so pages of new text pieces and original artwork and how Alex Ross went about creating his cover and all that stuff.
Okay.
Because I did have a look at the paperback one, again in Liverpool, in Forbidden Planet. Because I was like, well, if the paperback one's cheaper, and you can buy me that.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you about this in a minute.
Okay.
But the paperback one doesn't have the new stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
The paperback one is just a straight-up reprint of Origins. Because your sister, being your sister, said, not spending more than 30 quid on you. This was £29.57. I'll have that. And her face was like, But she bought it, man. So yeah. Fair play to her.
Well, that's nice. She didn't get me anything. I got her a present.
But what's interesting about this, I'm sure she did get you something. On the inside is the original cover by John Romita.
Oh, okay.
So you've got the Alex Ross cover on the dust jacket.
Which is a version of the
Romita
one.
Which is a version of the Romita one. So I am looking forward to reading about what so incensed people about what Stan wrote. The only bit I'm curious about is that does he specifically say he created Doctor Strange in this?
Right.
Because that is an outright fabrication.
Yeah.
Steve Ditko created Doctor Strange, and he's confessed to that in other earlier material. Now, you could argue Stan's memory was that he didn't remember that.
Right.
Because stuff said is tomorrow's version of the Stan Jack, and to a lesser extent, Steve Ditko feud.
Yeah.
And it is basically told in quotes from both men.
Right. Okay.
Countering yeah. each other. And the conclusion that that book comes to, which is why I think it's the furthest
yeah.
of the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby debate books, the conclusion it comes to is neither man is lying from their point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can never really know then.
It's mad that it's such a hotly discussed topic as well. Like, why so many people are still so up in arms and passionate about it.
Yeah.
It's an odd one.
It's an odd one for me in that the people who are on one side of debate actively refuse to accept that the person on the other side of debate contributed anything.
Yeah.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Without Jack, Marvel doesn't become Marvel.
Yeah.
But without Marvel, Jack doesn't become Jack.
Yeah.
And it's the amount of people who can't seem to wrap around the head that maybe it was those men at that time
yeah.
working on those properties and just magic happened.
Mm.
Because it never happened again. Stan never created anything worth a damn after 1969.
Yeah.
I don't count She-Hulk. Because he basically went to Marvel and said, you know that $6 million man TV show?
Yeah.
And they went, yeah. You know they've created a Bionic Woman, right? Yeah. The creator of the $6 million man doesn't see a penny of that. Oh. So maybe we should do a She-Hulk before the TV show does one? Yeah. Okay. And then they did a Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man was on TV.
Yeah.
And they basically came around just for copyright. Is that creating something, really? Maybe we should do a She-Hulk arguably. Before the TV show does it? I don't know.
There's an argument.
And it's a good first issue that Stan wrote with John Buscema, the yep. She-Hulk first issue. So, I don't know.
What did you get for Christmas, Messi?
Yeah, what did you get, doggo? Nothing.
You got new balls.
Well, we could always do some new balls.
You got a new jumper.
Oh.
He's been dressed like a Christmas tree since Christmas.
He don't look happy about it.
Well, I think he just wants attention.
Right. Okay. Next.
Again, following the theme, and off the back of the last one as well, this is Akira Toriyama's Dragon Quest illustrations. So
what's Dragon Quest?
Well,
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
Messi's glad I asked as well.
So Dragon Quest is one of the biggest, longest running, and most successful Japanese RPGs. Known over here on the Nintendo as Dragon Warrior until it was successful enough to warrant being republished in its original form. So I think there's about 11... There's 11 mainline games, loads of spin-offs, and the most recent one that's not out yet is the last one that Toriyama worked on before he passed.
Mm.
But similar to the Dragon Ball one, this is a collection of all the concept art and design work that Toriyama did for the game, starting off with the beginning, to all the monster designs, and then just going all the way through them all. So, especially starting with Dragon Quest III, which was the biggest at the time, Toriyama would design weapons, the armor, the outfits. There's a class system, so we designed the classes, all the monsters.
Yeah.
And again, you can see this illustration. And the interesting thing about this as well is, especially if you compare it to Dragon Ball, there is, like I mentioned before, this big overlap. So you kind of start seeing where one thing influences the other. There's maybe a character in Dragon Ball is wearing an outfit that's exactly the same as an outfit from Dragon Quest. So... again, just really interesting. Not a lot of context in this one as there is in the Dragon Ball one. There's not really many text pieces, and so you kind of get to the back and there's just maybe little bits here and there.
Yeah.
But as an art book, it seems quite comprehensive. It collects, again, everything, all the design work in there. anything that Toriyama did is collected in here. So again, just a really nice kind of
cute
companion piece. And I think they did this one, though it doesn't say on it anywhere. 30 years. So I think this was done for an anniversary that happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
So
very nice.
A nice little helpback.
I'm just going to pause here for a second to point out you are worrying what your sister bought you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. So quickly mention, was this at Thought Bubble?
Yes. Thought Bubble had a Steve Dillon exhibition of all his original art.
Which I think has popped up a few places because we saw it.
Yeah, it was in one of the comic stores in Leeds.
Not Leeds, Bradford.
Whatever.
One of the Fords.
Yeah, one of the Fords.
Yeah.
Harrison. yes, but it was different art.
Oh, right, okay.
And they didn't have these t-shirts, if I recall.
Yeah. So, yes, it is a t-shirt of Steve Dillon artwork. It's very, very big, but as I'm a 90s kid, I'm wearing a t-shirt that's three sizes too big, yeah, and I'm just, you know, tuck it in.
And are you going to do funny hand gestures while you sing Stay Another
always,
Day?
Always, always. Like Top of the Pops of the Day. Yeah. It's all about the gestures.
It's all about the hands. Yeah. So there you go. Your sister is genuinely did buy you that.
Okay.
I mean, I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
But she did actually pay me money.
So there we go. Sorry, Anya.
Yeah, so there you go.
Anyway. I got other t-shirts as well, but I've worn them. They're in the wash.
Right, okay.
A Lord of the Rings one and a Jurassic Park one.
I got a Back to the Future one off your mum, right, which is just the dials on the in the DeLorean, what years they go back to. I thought that was quite cool. Anyway, penultimate for me was off you.
Yes.
And it is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, the making of the classic film by John Tenuto and Maria Jose Tenuto. I presume they're related.
Just a coincidence.
And it's one of these lovely lash making, lovely lavish making of books where even though they are official, they can now be a little bit more honest in it because it's like 40 years since Star Trek 2 came out.
Right.
So they can be generally honest in the world. It's got lots of pictures in that I've never seen before. I love the cast and crew photo because it's interesting to see which actors were working that day and which ones weren't.
Mm.
Because the ones that were working that day are in costume. So they must have been filming the Genesis Cave when they took this photo, because Shatner's in costume, Kirstie Alley, Dee Kelly, Merritt Buttrick, and Walter Koenig, and BB Besh, but the rest of the cast are not. And though, this is interesting, I didn't know this is the only time William Shatner and Ricardo Montalban met whilst making Star Trek 2.
So
they never share a scene together in Star Trek 2.
Right.
Montalban stuff was filmed first,
yeah,
so he could go off and film Fantasy Island.
Okay.
Shatner's stuff was filmed second because he was filming the pilot for T.J. Hooker. So they never worked together on Star Trek 2.
Right.
Leonard Nimoy mustn't have been, though, because he's just a picture of him.
Yeah.
I don't know why Nimoy wasn't, though. Well, he was dead, wasn't he?
But then what?
So...
Well, Nimoy wasn't.
Well, no, Nimoy wasn't, but Spock was.
Was he not busy recording one of his very successful albums at the time?
He may have been, or he may have been recording his latest autobiography. I may not be Spock, but if I were to be Spock, that I would happily be Spock, but I'm not.
Is that the name?
Yes. It's got loads of great photos in it, some of which never been seen before, some of which you can quite clearly see that's been blown up a little too much and digitally enhanced, perhaps. Some that you can see Ricardo Montalban was definitely had his own chest. And there is little snippets of information in here that I was not privy to, like Khan had a baby.
All right.
And in the final scene where the Genesis device is about to explode,
yeah,
the baby wanders up to the device. So the explosion kills the baby.
Okay.
And they decided, no.
But they left that bit in?
No, they cut it out.
Oh, right, right.
That's not in the film.
Right.
So, because, well, they never filmed that bit.
Okay.
Because the baby didn't go towards the lights. But it meant that the earlier scene where Chekhov sees the baby had to be cut as well, because then it didn't make sense.
Okay.
And I think that's for the better that they cut that bit. But there's also, do you know what was fascinating? They talk about the novel.
Right.
And they talk about how they were worried that the novel would spoil the ending of the movie. Spoilers, Spock dies, but he gets better, so it's okay. What they were going to do was release the novel without the last chapter.
What, and you had to buy the
and
last
then you would
chapter.
Buy the last chapter separately.
Okay.
And they decided that was an incredibly stupid idea.
Yeah.
And somebody came up with the much better idea that would actually catch on much later, day and date. Star Trek II was the first movie novelization to be released on the day that the film came out.
Right. Oh, was it beforehand then?
So you could only... Yeah, Star Wars. The novel Star Wars comes out 6 months before the film.
Okay.
And Empire was out before the film.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. Shit. and I'm throwing it across the floor.
Ahead of its time now, because you get video games where you don't get the end of it, you have to pay it. So they were strangely ahead of their time in the worst way possible.
Yeah, and also ahead of the time with Day and Date.
Right.
That happens a lot now. If a movie even gets novelised now, the novels to the last three Star Wars films came out 6 months after the film. Because, God forbid, we should have spoiled the plot developments in those masterpieces. But anyway, that's just me. Anyway, so finally.
Finally, again from you. To follow on from my birthday present, which was the Ultimate Spider-Man Omnibus Volume 1. It is the Ultimate Spider-Man Omnibus Volume 2.
Wow.
I know.
Do you know what I was going to do?
Yeah.
I was going to be a twat. And I was going to give you Volume 2 for your birthday.
What, not Volume 1?
And then give you Volume 1 for Christmas. But I was overruled by people that thought that would have been mean.
Good, it would have been.
Yes, it would have been.
But this is... Oh, God, what does this collect? I've not got the dust jacket down here, so... collects...
Does it not say in the indicia somewhere?
Oh, somewhere. Yeah, we've got... Ultimate Spider-Man issues 40 to 56.
Wow.
57 to 71. Ultimate 6. 1 to 7. Oh, and the Ultimates... I did wonder why. Because I've just started reading Ultimate 6. Quesada only does, like... 4 pages. It's because apparently that's the prologue.
Was that not given away like an Ashcan edition or something?
Probably.
Because I don't remember ever reading that, so that may not be in my hardcovers.
Right, okay.
I'll have to have a look when I get home.
But yeah, so, I mean, I've just started reading this. I'm in Ultimate 6. It follows on from Venom. And, I mean, I don't really remember much of
this. So is your Hollywood art before this?
After.
Right, so mine is as well.
So this collects it in chronological order.
Because my comics, my hardcovers don't.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got the Geldof stuff, which...
Not the best.
It's fine. It's interesting in some of the things that it wants to say about the X-Men. There's a part of me that wishes maybe Bendis was the ultimate overseer to an extent. There's a lot of really good things in this regarding mutants and the kind of post-9/11 fear that was going in it, kind of retranslated to be mutants. that maybe was lacking in the Ultimate X-Men, and I don't know. I wonder why Bendis's ideas for Ultimate X-Men were rejected and it ended up being Miller instead. We then have a Sandman issue, which is a retcon, and then you straight into Ultimate 6. I've got, I think, about 2 issues left of this. It's not awful.
I always love that as a review. Yeah. It's not awful.
It's not a bad Ultimate story, but Spider-Man's barely in it.
Right.
You've then got the Black Cat stuff. You've then got the Hollywood stuff with Dr. Octopus back.
So you're past me, though, then. I've not read Ultimate 6 yet. I reread Ultimate 6.
You've got Carnage. You've got the body swap issue with Wolverine. And then you've got the Doctor Strange stuff. And then, yeah, all your stuff in the back. So it's good. I've really enjoyed reading this because it's been... I think I've read and reread Ultimate Spider-Man loads.
Yeah, my hardcovers were always... You always had my hardcovers upstairs.
Yeah.
My Nightwings upstairs.
Yeah.
And there was another one that you forever just... You'd get to the end and go back and reread again.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it was.
So it's been really good reading these. And especially with it being years since... To kind of reflect on it. Because everything... Most of the things that we've seen with the films for the last... 15 years comes from the Ultimates.
There's an awful lot of Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man stuff comes from Ultimates.
Yeah.
Which I had completely forgotten until I reread them.
Yeah.
But we're going to do an Ultimates episode, Ultimate Spider-Man episode. Yeah.
But it's been good to kind of revisit it, and there's a lot of, because this was the flagship of the Ultimates line at the time.
Yeah, it's amazing how much of it doesn't correlate with the other books.
Yeah, and there's so much of it that feels optimistic.
Mm.
There's a lot of it where there's a bit too many Bendises at times.
Yeah.
It's been good and it's been refreshing. And then there's a few moments where it's kind of like, oh wow, this really was in
the early
2000s. I think Peter calls Flash a retard in one bit and it's like, okay, this is...
Okay, that was a thing.
It's kind of like... a fascinating time capsule, because the more it goes on, the Ultimate Verse, it gets more downtrodden with the very thing that it didn't want to be. It mm-hmm. didn't want to be overly complicated yeah. and have too many crossovers. So I do wonder how this would have been were Bendis were to oversee all of the Ultimate.
Yeah, and of, if he'd have been like the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate's line. Yeah,
similar to how Hickman is now. I suppose the big irony there is it was Bendis and Hickman who drove the Ultimate Universe into the ground in the first place. Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But,
well,
yeah.
Don't go on.
No, I was going to say, it's going to be, I think there's 5 omnibuses, so I'm going to have to pick up the next few at some point.
Well, see, it's funny you should say that, because I got for my Christmas present off your mum, Volume 3 of Ultimate Spider-Man Omnibus, which, by a pure coincidence,
yeah.
picks up exactly where my hardcovers leave off.
I'd also like to point out that you have the issues for these.
No, I don't.
Oh, did you sell them? You said, oh, that's convenient, isn't
it? Sold them all for a decent wedge. Because there was a point where these were worth serious money.
Mm.
Sold them all.
Right.
Got very good money for them. Gone now.
Yeah.
Obviously. But yeah, my hardcovers finish at issue 71. And this picks up at 72. None of this I've reread yet. I believe this is the end of Mark Bagley's run.
Yes.
Because he does 105 issues, 106. Because they did an awful lot of crowing at the time that we've beaten Stan and Jack's run of 102 issues of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And even then, I thought that was a bit... Well, Bagley can lay claim to that.
Yeah.
But you've not written 102 stories that are as innovative, during, different and original as Stan and Jack did on the Fantastic Four, Brian.
Yeah.
So that's a bit self-aggrandizing. And that's where I started going off him a bit.
Mm.
That was... No, that ego is not deserved.
Well, it's weird because in the backups for the first omnibus, you get a lot of these pieces that he did for Wizard and that.
Mm.
Comes off as such an obnoxious knob. Like, the writing's there, yeah, sure, but Bendis actually talking about Bendis and being Bendis just puts me off him so much.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like your work, but shut up.
Yeah, well, that's what I... Mark Bagley can lay claim to he has done the single biggest consecutive run
yeah.
of any artist ever. He drew 106 issues or whatever it was mm. to beat that record. I'm sorry, Brian, you're not claiming you've done anything near as daring and innovative as they did on the FF.
Yeah.
I'm not having it. Sorry. But how these three came about is a bit funny. So yeah. you'd said for your birthday you were looking either for the Volume 1 of Ultimate Spider-Man
mm.
or Volume 1 of Straczynski's Omnibus of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The good volume before yeah. he did all the sins past shit. Which has been retconned and we'll never speak of it again. So I found one on eBay and I wrote to the guy and I made him an offer
right.
for it. And he said, oh, okay. And then he came back to me and said, oh, no, I've had a lot of interest in these and I kind of need the money. I said, all right, don't worry about it. No money's changed hands.
Yeah.
You're not backing out on a deal or anything like that. Don't worry about it. But if it gets me any extra points, they're for my son's birthday. And he went, all right, I'll bear you in mind that you were the first person to make me an offer. So he relists them for slightly higher than they were originally because right. of the interest he's got in them. And he's put Volume 2 and Volume 3 on as well. So I've watched them.
And then you send him another message going,
No, I didn't. Three. I didn't do anything. He came back to me and said, do you still want this first one? I said, yeah, but how would you accept this for all three?
Yeah.
And he went, okay.
Right.
And I'm wondering what happened in that gap between me originally offering to buy it and him saying, let's see if I can get a bit more because I need it.
Yeah.
And him just stopping the auction and giving them to me.
Right.
Because he didn't wait till the auction finished and it didn't sell.
Mm.
He stopped the auction and sold all three of them to me for a decent price for all three of them.
Yeah.
Including postage.
Yeah. So maybe it's just because these aren't, they're still quite in print and they're not. So maybe it was just a case of he realised that no one really wanted to pay.
Well, he had them on. He had them on for 60.
Right, okay.
And I got him for cheaper than that.
Right, okay.
So unless his wife said, somebody's offered you money and we need the cash, snap his hands off before he finds them somewhere else,
yeah.
which is your mum's theory.
Either that or like the fridge or washing machine packed in and he was like, I can't wait.
Whatever, and he needed the money very quickly. So whatever. So he did, he duly shipped them to me. And there was a part of me that's like, am I being mean not giving you Volume 3?
Well... Yeah.
And then there was a part of me that's like, but he's going to get it eventually. And I mean, you know, maybe I'll read it and be watching it, because my recollection of Ultimate Spider-Man is I got to Ultimate Six and that's where I lost interest. I remember thinking Ultimate Six was dreadful.
Mm.
So I'm looking, well, maybe not forward, but I'm interested in rereading it to see if I've unclenched slightly.
Yeah, it's not... It's because it's the Sinister Six, but there's not six of them.
Mm.
And it's seven issues.
Instead of one annual.
Yeah, and it's... Because I was thinking about the annual as well, because it's very easy to kind of compare it. And one of the things that I've liked doing is... I read volume one alongside the Lee Ditko stuff, and then I'm reading volume two alongside the Romita stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Sinister Six, one of my favourite things about that annual is not only did they kind of form, I don't want to say create, they didn't really create, the characters were there anyway, but they formed the Sinister Six. But also, at the same time, it's just an advert for every other Marvel book.
Yeah.
So how Stan and Ditko did that, well, they just slowed, like, okay, it's been two pages, we need another advert.
Let's get up, man.
Here's Thor, here's this. It's, like, genuinely just fascinating stuff. Yeah. Like, how are they doing? Because the story itself is not good. It's not very...
It's fine.
Everyone remembers it. And I remember reading this review.
The art is... saved it.
They are defeated by their own hubris and yada yada. And like, no, they have a really stupid plan. Yeah. Like, Dr. Octopus is just like, everything is meticulously planned.
And I've built this giant fishbowl.
By all of your, I have, you each have a specific place that will complement your powers. And, you know, you have to fight him in a, okay, great. How are we going to decide what order? Oh, well, pull your name out, pull a number out. But not only that, okay, we're going to go one further. They draw lots to decide what order that
they're
going
to be. Order they attack
now,
him in.
Let's keep in mind that Dr. Octopus has literally just said, you are going to fight Spider-Man in a specific place that will complement your powers, right?
Yeah.
They just pull out, and it doesn't have their name on it, it just has a number on. So it's like, right, Electro, pull out yours, right, I'm number three. Right, Kraven, pull out yours, I'm number four. The location's on the back. So it's not specific, it's not planned.
See, what I love about that as well is he's assuming he's going to beat all of us to get to him.
Yeah.
That's not really a vote of confidence for poor Kraven,
but
is it?
It's not some kind of grand scheme. His big plan, this is how he's going to defeat Spider-Man. He's going to get a fishbowl, a massive fishbowl.
See, Amazing Spider-Man Annual number one is my all-time favourite comic, and yet I can't argue with you.
And... Yes, Bendis isn't bringing anything original to the table.
Apart from Gandalf.
Yeah.
Not Gold, whatever. Gandalf.
It's good to see elements that maybe not have aged as well reformatted to Ultimate. So it's nice to read the two together to kind of get that. But yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, all right. I don't really have any argument for that. It's got good art, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. Anyway, that's it. That's it for our Happy New Year special.
Yes.
A little bit later than planned due to technical difficulties and life. But we will see you next time in an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics looking at James Bond.
Oh, is that it? Is that
James Bond is the next episode, yeah. Okay. So we'll be looking at James Bond comics from Dynamite next time. So all that remains is for us to say we hope you had a happy Christmas.
Yes.
And that 2025 is... slightly better than 2024, and if Christmas isn't your thing for whatever reason, we hope you still manage to stay safe in the arms of people that care about you. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Hey Kids Comics is a The Devil Will Make Work for Idle Hands to Do production, and hosted by Andrew and Michael Leyland. All opinions expressed in the show are the opinions of the hosts, and no one else. The free-to-use music that closes and opens the show was the sci-fi cyberpunk trailer by somebody called Stringer Bell on the Pixabay.com free-to-use website. Thank you very much to him. If you would like to support the show, you can buy Michael and I, or both of us, or one of us, a coffee. Go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/aleyland. In 1 month, an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics, coming in your ears. It's a date.